CFU, Law! It's Brian D!
No! No! Don't you understand the meaning of the word expelled, D?
I signed up. I'm still in the system. The rules say I can play.
Who sold you that load of Molyneux? Huh? Around here, I'm the dungeon keeper, and my rules are in black and white. Looks like your fable ends here.
I know it does. It was my dream to play on a VGHS team, and I screwed it up.
Yeah, you messed it up bad. Like a failure. So what are you doing on my battlefield?
This isn't about you and me. It's not about getting back in. It's about one last chance to play with the best of the best. It's about playing the game. Because at the end of the day, Calhoun, it's all about the game.
GG, Brian D.
Welcome to the Objective Secure podcast. My name's Mike.
Hi, I'm Emma.
This is episode 62, Format Overload. We're going to have a bit of a chat about...
Different formats.
Yeah, the formats for...
The Warhammer, clue's in the name, right?
Not just Warhammer 40,000. It kind of references most games these days because a lot of games have an unspoken... And we've spoken about it before around social contracts and that sort of thing, but you can kind of play most games a few different ways. So we wanted to explore... why there's no right or wrong answer in regards to how you want to play a game and what you get out of it. And then maybe take a quick look at some of the formats that we know that exist around the world, which we've talked about many times before on this podcast.
Before we do get into that, I will just apologise. We are in the middle of a freak summer thunderstorm.
A hailstorm, yeah.
So we've got hail pounding down and rain and whatnot. So if you can hear that in the background, we've done the best we can to try and soundproof where we are, but... It's coming down pretty hard.
And I'll do some work in post if I can. But yeah, we'll see what we get. The mics are pretty sensitive and they are picking it up. So we'll see how we go.
Anyway, back to the actual point.
Before we do get stuck into the topic though, Emma's just mentioned to me off air that we've just had her 50th... Or we just had within a couple of episodes. Mm. We're not 100% certain because we had an episode 11A and B, and then we've also... She was on at least one or two prior to episode 11. When we changed the format, which was episode 11. Mm. This is episode 62. Mm-hmm. So you've done at least 50 of these now.
Well, yeah.
We're not 100% certain what that number might be, 51, 52, but you've done at least 50. Mm-hmm. Now, one a fortnight over 50 means it's...
coming up 2 years.
Yeah.
Actually, do you know what? It probably is exactly 2 years, if you think about it. 52 episodes.
Well...
once a fortnight.
Like I say, I know for 100% certainty you were in... episode 11 and 11, so 11A and B.
Mm. What date did episode 11 go out?
So episode 11, because I now have my swanky list of all the episodes, which is great.
Do you know what I love about this? You've got a spreadsheet. Love it.
It's
taken me 5 years, but we've got some spreadsheets happening.
So that episode aired on the 15th of February, 2018.
Ah, there we go.
So it's been just over 2 years since that episode aired. However, you were in episode 7. You were in episode 8. I don't know about 9, but you were definitely in 7 and 8.
I'm so memorable. I don't know.
Well, I'm looking at the... because I've listed the first 10 when we were mucking about with it in 2017.
Yeah.
And I'm solo for the first... retrospectively. And then 7, 8, 9 aren't listed as just me. And then 10 is listed as just me. So there's three there that I reckon you're a part of. And then when we kicked it back off in February of 2018, you've been in every one since.
Hmm.
So it has been 2 years since you started recording stuff. You've now had a full 2 years.
Hmm.
So there you go.
There we go.
Congratulations.
2 years of listening to me dribble on.
Yeah. Before we get into any of the topical type stuff, we should have a quick look at some of the releases and stuff that we've been hearing about.
Do you know, can I change the subject? When
sure.
I know. When Mum was pregnant with me, she went to see a psychic, and apparently the psychic told her that I was going to go on to host a radio show. Now, I'm not sure that this is what the psychic had in mind all of those years ago, but
just you never know.
Into my head, hey.
Look, it's possible. Mm. And I suppose back then, it like the idea of a podcast even existing wouldn't have been a thing. So, you know, that's novel.
It is, because it's totally not in Mum's character at all to go see a psychic.
No, that is another potent query in there.
Anyway, that was a total side topic, but, you know, how unlike me.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the bits and pieces that I've seen happen in the last couple of weeks on Games Workshop. There's also an announcement that I want to talk about for War Machine and Hordes, which is their new game. So why don't we start there?
Okay.
So the game is called Warcaster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from Privateer Press, as I've just mentioned. And it's basically a science fiction version that they've released. Neo Mechanica, I think is the way they phrase it, is the like the subheading for it. And it's going to go onto Kickstarter. And they've already previewed a bunch of the miniatures. And it's still very... In my opinion, you can tell it's a Privateer Press game in terms of the style choices that they've made. But it is very high tech. So it's this weird sort of crossover for me between Infinity and 40K. Yeah.
Infinity and War Machine.
Yeah. Oh, look, I can see the 40K notes attached to it.
Right.
But that might just be because 40K is stolen from everything. So as soon as you borrow ideas from something, it looks the same. So from what I gather with it, there's no... So the name Warcaster, obviously with anyone who has any knowledge of War Machine or Hordes knows that they have a caster on the table that normally controls the war beasts or the war jacks. Interestingly enough, this game looks like you don't actually have a Warcaster on the table. You are the Warcaster for the army. So you get a command and control deck, basically. So it, from what I can gather, and like I say, it's all still kind of sketchy for me, it's still using the 2D6 methodology that they have in War Machine, but it also uses cards as well, a bit like Malifaux. So I could be completely wrong there. That's just kind of what I've taken off the website. If you're interested in checking it out, you can just Google Privateer Press Warcaster and it'll come up pretty quickly. And there's a whole bunch of art and, you know, miniature samples and all the rest of it. I don't know what to think about it. I actually quite like the style of some of these miniatures. Like, I really do quite like the element choices. They've only shown two factions so far, though.
It's interesting because I guess here we've seen that War Machine isn't necessarily increasing in its popularity.
It's certainly going through a valley in regards to its popularity.
Well, that we've seen.
Certainly here in Perth that we're aware of.
Yeah, and I'm really aware that there are pockets of people who play who... do it by themselves you know, don't know that there's other people playing. So
there's definitely between sort of 16 and 20 active tournament goers. And the game is, War Machine specifically does really work in a tournament environment. And we've sort of got another, I know of another 6 to 10 who will come out and play on occasion. But in its heyday here in Perth, when the community in terms of tournaments was very active, there were 50, 60 player events. Like it was big.
I guess what I'm wondering is, is this an interesting... I don't know whether or not that reflects what's happening worldwide or it's something that's unique to WA, because I will admit I'm not familiar enough with the War Machine community to know what it's like in other states or other countries. So I'm wondering, is this an interesting choice that with sort of the not necessarily increasing numbers of players, that they've then gone out and created something new? And is this potentially a way that they're going to try and rebuild that War Machine community?
Yeah. Well, I mean, from the sounds of it, obviously it's not going to be compatible with War Machine.
No, it's not. But it's going to have to leverage...
Well, that's it. It's going to leverage off of those players who might...
In the same way that Age of Sigmar and 40K aren't...
Yeah, leverage off of each other. Yeah.
...aren't the same game, but at the same time, they're still related and interconnected enough that one increases the knowledge around the other.
I definitely think as well, like we've seen Star Wars Legion get released, I'm trying to think, 12 months ago... give or take, maybe 18 months ago.
Time's just,
40K's gone through its second golden age, essentially. since the release of 8th edition, where we've had people coming back to 40k in droves.
Now, I am aware that some people have left for 8th edition because they don't like it. However,
yeah.
Overwhelmingly, we've seen a lot of people coming back.
Absolutely. So I wonder whether this is Privateer Press's response and to get involved with science fiction gaming, because between Star Wars, X-Wing, yeah. Infinity, and 40K, obviously, you've got a whole pool of people there that clearly like the science fiction genre.
Cash in while you can.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see where that game goes.
Perhaps cashing while you can was the wrong thing to say. Perhaps I should have said that's where the market need is or demand yeah. is, so meet the market demand. That sounds a lot better, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
Well done.
Cut the other part out.
We then have... I've got five different things quickly to talk about on Games Workshop.
Derailing.
First thing we have is the Black Library Celebration, mm-hmm. which is happening on Saturday the 29th of February.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because it's a leap year, so it is a unique date to just to add it all together. There are six short stories that are being released for Age of Sigmar 40K, Horus Heresy, and I think one of them is a horror one as well, because they've started doing a horror range
yes.
in Black Library.
I know I've been watching David Annandale's
yes.
updates of him setting the mood for writing his horror story.
Yes. but on Celebration Day, they're releasing a new... Now, it's a Warhammer 40,000 novel,
mm-hmm.
but it's based around the Custodes and the Sisters of Silence, which have a long tradition of being heresy forces,
mm.
Written by Chris Wright. And off the back of that, they're also releasing the two characters from the cover, from who the main characters nice. Of the book, as miniatures,
mm-hmm.
Which is the first Sisters of Silence standalone miniature, and then another character for the Custodes. So apparently they're on pre-order now at a number of the local gaming stores, but they're not available for pre-order at Warhammer stores, or at least locally I don't believe they are, which is a bit strange.
That is odd.
It's also interesting that it looks like Black Library's Celebration is actually going to local gaming stores, because I don't believe I've ever seen that before either. So I'm definitely going to have to head down to the store and check this out, because ironically, the box, it's a two miniature box, so you get both the characters from the book.
Mm.
I actually only really want one of them, so I'm hoping that I can find someone
who might
split it with me. But definitely worth going and checking out on the 29th of February. Moving on, Warhammer Underworld's Grand Masters.
Mm-hmm. Coming in Nova.
Yep. So there are 10 random winners from store championships that have been picked now, and they will receive a free ticket for the Nova Open.
Any WA players?
Not that I'm aware of.
Shame.
The store championships, I don't think I haven't seen any announcements relating to us in WA. But yeah, that's now rapidly approaching. Mm. So it'd be interesting to see what that event looks like and how many people actually attend, because obviously with it being in Washington, if you're on the west coast of America, then attending isn't a huge burden. But obviously, I mean, we've had two grand clashes here in WA, and I know that the person in, I know Ryan's not attending.
Aww.
And
it's a shame he can't give his ticket to...
Yeah, but no, not allowed to.
Yeah, I know, and it makes sense, doesn't it? Because you want the top players from around the world playing against
each It'll just
other.
Be interesting to see how many they actually get from outside of the United States, let alone from outside of the West Coast. So, and I don't think it matters where you put it. Like, you could have put that at Nottingham and they'd still have the same issue where none of the Americans would go, and, you end up with a cost-benefit scenario happening where you've got to go, it's going to be $2,000, $2,500, $3,000, depending on where you're coming from.
Interesting that they've chosen to do it in America and not in Nottingham.
Well, that's it, at Nova rather than at Warhammer World.
At Warhammer World, exactly. Yeah. So I wonder what thought process went into that.
I don't know. But we'll find out once we get to, if everything goes to plan, we'll hopefully be there to see.
Hmm. Get working on that, please.
I have been.
Good.
There's a new made-to-order that's just gone up for 40K, which I loved the idea of and then have been slightly horrified by.
Are you going to share that thought process?
Or yes.
Just leave it
so,
there? No, just leave it there.
So the made-to-order, they do this periodically where they just go back to the old vaults and then do a one last run
yeah,
of...
Before the mold dies.
So these are from second edition Warhammer 40K. Mm-hmm. These are the Valhallan, I forget what the actual, Valhallan Ice Warriors, I believe is their official title. I remember when these came out. And
we've covered in lots of episodes that you're old and you've been gaming a long time. Move on.
So anyway, they've basically given us the infantry squads, the Melter Flamer and Grenade Launcher. I don't believe there was ever a plasma gun variant. There's the Heavy Bolter, the Autocannon, and the Mortar and the Missile Launcher. Again, I don't believe there was ever a Las Cannon variant. And then there's the Veteran Officer, the Commander Chenkov, and you can also then buy them as like a big pack where you get like a full platoon where it's three heavy weapons, two squads, and a command squad type thing. So all of that sounds really cool. And then as an Aussie, you go and have a look at the price.
Even without looking at the price, and I promise I'll loop back to the price in a minute, but I do think that this comes back to something that we've discussed in numerous previous episodes again, around how long should the life of a model be?
Yeah.
So, you know, this model was released, what, 20 years ago? Okay, let's prior to 20 years ago.
Yeah, I reckon they'd be mid to late 90s would be my best guess.
That's 20 years ago.
It's more than that. 20 plus years ago.
Anyway, so 20-ish years. So you would imagine that 20 years for a model, that's beyond its regular life. So how long is it going to be before the next iteration of those models are introduced? And the scale is going to be different and the models are going to be different and the silhouette will be different. So can
look at Sisters of Battle.
Exactly. So can you then effectively use that in a game, or does it become Legends, which then brings us all the way back to how much money are you paying for something that you may only be able to use for 6 months before they see that this is popular, so they're going to release a new version of it.
Well, the funny thing with the Astra Militarum, I mean, there's already rules for the Valhallans in the Codex. So you can already play Valhallans, but the models just have not been available in years, other than the third-hand, second-hand market.
97th hand because they're 25 years old.
Well, that's it. I recently got some miniatures from 1989 sent to me from a listener in the UK because there were a couple missing from my collection from that era because of my age at the time. And, you know, he sold them for a couple of dollars each, shipped them to me, and that's awesome because they've filled a little gap, but you can't buy them anymore and I don't expect to use them on the table, but I wanted them for the set.
And that's the other thing, you know, for these particular models, would people be buying them because they're cool models to have and for the same thing that you are, for nostalgia reasons, or buying them because you want to be able to use them on the table?
Well, it's funny because they still... So I've got the pricing up for them at the moment. Mm-hmm. And if you go and buy a 10-man Valhallan Ice Warrior squad, they are $70 Australian. So that's... I think it's... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So yeah, it is 10. Okay. I thought maybe they've only gone...
It's always nice if you can count, isn't it?
Well, because you can put a special weapon and a heavy weapon team in the squads, I wondered whether they'd done that, but they haven't. So you're up for $70 Australian for that squad. Mm-hmm. If you go and buy the Steel Legion squad, which are again metal, but these are from 3rd edition, it's a 10-man squad, but you actually get a heavy weapon and a special weapon in that squad now. Mm-hmm. That's $60. Mm-hmm. And if you buy the plastic 10-man box of the Cadian Shock Troops or the Catachan Jungle Fighters, which are both... The Catachan are 3rd, I think the Cadian are 4th. They are $48 for 10. So you've got a $60 metal, these limited run $70 metal, or $48 plastic.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a premium being charged there. The heavy weapon teams and stuff, though, is where this... they did it with... I can't remember the name of the regiment, but they had the big sort of tall hat, like the big English... You know, the guards that patrol Buckingham Palace? Yeah, they had those sort of hats and... The Vostrian regiment. When they went made to order, they had the same issue where you go $70 for 10 guys...
Do you remember our children's middle names?
Yes.
I'm just wondering, because you're coming up with this stuff from however long ago.
So you're paying $70 for the Valhallan Ice Warrior squad. Mm-hmm. And you go, okay, cool. I want to put a heavy bolter in the squad. Mm. And I want a grenade launcher.
Yeah.
The heavy bolter, two guys and a heavy bolter, $40. Mm. The three special weapon pack, which is a flamer, a grenade launcher, and a melter gun, $50.
But how many points?
Guardsmen, I think, are 5 points a model.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right. So you are, like, this becomes remarkably expensive
to
do it en masse. Like, you're going to want the Loyal 32, which is the standard plug-in for a lot of armies to get command points, is going to set you back 21, so 210 plus the two characters, which are $40 a character.
Yeah.
So you're up for nearly $300 for the Loyal 32, and they set you back all of, like, 200 points.
Yeah, well, that's what I was just thinking. So, you know, we look at Jane Steel Occult as one of the most expensive armies, and that works out roughly, very roughly, to be about $1 a point.
It's in some cases a lot worse than that, depending on what you build. But yeah. I worked mine out to be roughly like $1.20 a point or something.
Whereas with this, you've got some models that are up for $4 a point.
Mm. Really, really expensive.
But still, I guess overall, if you're getting 200 points for $300, it's about $1.50 a point.
Well, the funny, and I shouldn't be surprised by this, Games Workshop, you can buy the heavy weapon teams, which are three heavy weapons. Mm-hmm. Now, they're $40 each. You would go, oh, you know what? I'm going to try and sell three of them. I'll make them $100 for three. You know, give a reason to buy three.
Yeah.
No, full price, $120. Yeah. And the same with the platoon. The platoon's $210, and from what I can gather, is
just more packaging. Think of the environment.
Mm.
Are they doing sprue recycling yet?
I don't believe so. But then my I would have bought this model were it now not for the price point. Is the original Commissar Yarrick model from, this would be, I want to say it's Rogue Trader, but I don't know if it was Rogue Trader or a second. Long time ago. The classic Commissar Yarrick is going to be redone, mm-hmm. and he is going to be $70. Mm. He's also on a 32mm base now, which they've listed, which is interesting. Now, that model way back when was, I think, $8.
Yeah.
And you can't do that comparison. It just doesn't work that way. What's interesting about it, though, is this is a metal original edition Commissar Yarrick.
Yeah.
$70 on a 32mm base. Mm-hmm. The current Commissar Yarrick model is in fine cast. He was metal. He's now fine cast. Mm. He's $28 on a 25mm base.
Ah.
Thank you, Games Workshop. So, like, what do you do with that? Do you put him on a 25mm because that's what the current model has? Well, or do you... he's supplied with a 32.
Yeah.
Like,
does that mean that if he's now supplied with a 32, then does the current model you well, can
that's
start
it. Do you have to put it on a 32? Yeah. Thanks very much.
It does make our life as a TO somewhat tricky.
Although I must admit, that after we did that last episode, I'm more and more of the mind that as long as I don't think you're rorting the system, I'm probably going to say yes. Because the more I think about the whole modelling for advantage and basing thing, as long as you're being reasonable, I can be reasonable with you.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the thought exercise that thought exercise for me after that episode really made me go, you know what? Maybe we as a community need to actually start lightening the hell up. Yeah. I'm not you. I'm talking about, you
know. I know what you're talking
about. So... But yeah, so I'm really disappointed because that Commissar Yarrick model has a lot of nostalgia attached to it for me.
Which comes down to how much is nostalgia worth to you?
Not $70, not for a model I won't use on the table.
But for some people, you know, their goal isn't necessarily to put it on the table.
No, and I've just done this. I've bought those Ghost Assassin droids from Rogue Trader. I've now got enough, in theory, to do a squad for them.
Yeah.
But I've got nothing to use them as, and I'll have to go to a TO and say, hey, I want to use them as Storm Guardians or something.
Yeah.
But that wasn't why I wanted them.
Yeah, and I know that, for example, Marcus, who was involved with the West Oz Miniature Painters group for when it started and then for a while after that and in and out, he had this one particular model that he'd always wanted for however long, couldn't afford to buy it way back when, and then it became available, and now... You know, everything is about planning how he's going to paint that. And that's much more important to him than being able to use it to play on the table. So it really does depend where your hobby goals are.
Yeah.
Yours are still table-based because you hate painting.
Yes. I don't hate painting. I go through phases of painting.
I've never found a phase in the 21 years that we've been together where you've done painting for painting's sake, for enjoyment.
No, I always have a goal.
Yeah. And it's never to gain enjoyment out of painting. it's get these painted so to this standard so that I can play or well, do this or take it or...
Yeah, okay, I suppose that's fair. Maybe not in the whole context, but yeah, that's fair.
What do you mean not in the whole context?
Well, sometimes I may not paint because I enjoy painting, but I don't paint just to meet minimum standard.
No, I never said to paint minimum standard.
Well, that's what I'm referencing.
I said that you don't paint... It's not that you pick up a paintbrush because you think, I really enjoy painting.
No, it's not. Unlike our son, who doesn't sit there and enjoy painting.
And he has no pile of shame.
No, he doesn't. I
and
actually,
you do.
I do.
But get him to paint the Titan.
That's not going to happen. he built
he'd have it done by the weekend.
He actually built me a Gundam so that I can try the colour schemes out, which was suggested on the live stream.
George's idea.
And I also found the Warhound armour panels out to spray those with the airbrush, and I've cleared
to
all...
Try your marbling.
Yeah, well, I actually found a video on YouTube last night that I watched and now understand, because people have described how to do it before, but I've never really understood what that means.
Oh, that's interesting, because you're not generally a visual learner.
No, but...
It's interesting that you needed to see the video.
Well, I understood it in theory, but it helped no end to make sure that I understood, like, what I assumed was correct, because I didn't want to spray it on a very expensive model and stuff it up. And the Gundam miniature, while great for testing out some of the colour shift paints and some of the metallics, isn't going to have a big enough surface area for me to try the marbling effect on.
Yeah.
So, anyway, bit off topic there.
While we're off topic, and since I mentioned recycling sprues however long ago, have you seen that there's a new, I'm going to use the word craze, it's not a craze, but anyway, but I'm still going to use it. So have you seen there's a new craze of building terrain out of clipped off bits of sprue?
Yes, I have seen those.
Oh my goodness. How much time do you need to have on your
hands
in order to be able to do that?
Well, it's like the Sprucrons. Have you ever seen the Sprucron army?
I haven't.
So someone took all the, they built a Necron army and then with all the spare sprues, cut them into, like, because the Necrons are just robot skeletons. They then took the sprues, cut them into lengths and made robots out of just cut lengths of sprues and glued them to bases and doubled their army. So they became the Sprucrons. And since then, I've seen the blood letters, which are literally red pipe cleaners shaped into letters, hence blood letter.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen Sprucrons. I've seen a bunch of terrain built with...
some of it's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Some of it is absolutely absolutely stunning.
And it's fantastic. Like, great way to...
It's a
huge
amount of work.
Not add to landfill and all of that kind of stuff, but... So much work. Yeah. I so do not have that kind of dedication.
No. No, neither do I. And it's terrain, which is doubly so. Mm. Back to Commissar Yarek. He has a crab claw. That's the reason I wanted the model.
All right.
So I'm going to very quickly show Emma the crab claw, which is the sole purpose for me wanting this particular miniature back from the day.
Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing.
It's not.
It's so good.
It's really not. You can tell that that's from the 90s.
Yeah, definitely. Get the colour scheme. Although, this version of it...
No, actually, the whole thing.
What I found really interesting with this photo that they've put on the Warhammer community page, it's actually been photoshopped.
Ah.
Because if you look and zoom in on the photo, you can actually see that he's not on that base.
Mm.
And there's a tiny bit of goblin green from the second edition paint job that they've photoshopped and put it onto the 32mm base. The angle of the base is wrong for the way his feet are, which made me go, that's not right. And then you zoom in and there's green on his feet because his feet are metal, so you can see the reflection from the Photoshop. So they photoshopped him onto a 32mm base, which I think is...
Why wouldn't they just cut him off and clip him off? Oh, I guess if it's from a photo rather than still having the original model.
They've probably still got the original model somewhere.
Yeah, but it takes way too long to find it.
Well, even if it's down in the... In the big cabinet ed area, you don't want to, like, that model's been around for 25 plus years. Do you really want to go down and hack it off its base for the sake of a simple photo, or do you just chuck it through Photoshop and hope no one picks it up?
I would cut it off and put it on a new base.
Well, clearly they had another idea.
Yeah.
So, because I was really amazed.
If you're going to do it properly.
Well, when I saw this, I thought, wow, they've repainted it in the original color scheme. And then looked at it and went, no, that's not the original. That is the original color scheme because it's the original model. Two more things. Sunday preview on the 23rd of Feb came out, and we now have the plastic incubi and banshees coming for order this weekend. So they're coming out on the 29th for pre-order.
Mm-hmm.
They first were part of Blood of the Phoenix, which was the box released with the original Psychic Awakening Book 1.
Uh-huh.
So we're also going to get Jane Zarr and Drazhar as well. So that's taken them about 4 months between that release and now for them to release those miniatures. The cynical part of me thinks they were just looking at the stock levels of Blood of the Phoenix, and when it hit a certain number, they went, okay, now we can release them. But that's me being a bit cynical. Anyway.
Makes business sense.
It does. So if you were hanging out waiting for Incubi and Banshees for your 40K army, they are now...
Bye.
They are now just around the corner.
Yep.
Last thing. New York Toy Fair happened on the weekend. And we got some new releases for pretty much everything. So they previewed the new Warhammer Underworlds warband.
Yes.
Morgox Crushers, which is an orc warband, I should say. Very similar to the original Orcs in style, but they we got one that's sort of not wearing any torso armor, and he's got a weird sort of bone helmet on. And I think a few people were hoping for more like feral orcs, savage orcs, whereas these are a very classical still Orc brutes. They're cute. I think there's a lot of people hoping that the cards they come with will breathe life into the old warband.
Yeah.
We've got new Avenger Strike Fighters coming to the Imperial Navy Squadrons for Aeronautica, which they previewed as well, which are beautiful little models, but I'm still waiting for my Xenos. Give me my Xenos. They've also announced Rise of the Orcs, Blitz Bowl Season 2, and Crypt Hunters, which are the new standalone box games that they're going to bring out in the States. So Rise of the Orcs is one of the Space Marine board games. Blitz Bowl Season 2 is sort of Blood Bowl, but in a smaller version. And Crypt Hunters is for Age of Sigmar. And they're... I think they're board games that you can put on the shelf in a more mainstream environment and hope they trigger people to then learn more with other, you know, as a gateway drug for less gamer-orientated players. So it'd be interesting to see whether they get a release here in Australia. I very much doubt it, since we didn't get any of the... Like, we didn't get Season 1 of Blitz Bowl, and we didn't get the original Space Marine box game either. What's also interesting is that Space Marine box game and this one use the Season 1 and Season 2 of the Japanese limited release models. So this is a way of getting them outside of blind packs, because you know what you're getting in the box. So... Coloured plastic, although I do notice they, the Rise of the Orc one has the five Terminators. One's yellow, one's green, one's red, one's blue, and one's Space Wolf Grey. So I'm assuming they're going to be the five chapters again. Yeah. All of the Orcs are tokens.
Yeah.
So I would hope this box isn't more than somewhere between... Given it's Australia, it's probably going to end up around the $70 or $80 mark.
Yeah, I was going to say probably $100.
But with only five miniatures in it, I kind of went, oh... That's a bit disappointing. Whereas the Age of Sigma one, you get the four Stormcast, and then you get, I think it's like 12 of the Chain Rasps and the Night Haunt miniatures. And it's on a hex grid style thing. And Blitz Bowl, I think, is two teams of about eight miniatures. So it's just interesting that the, like, they've probably got all these Assault on Blackreach orcs lurking around from fourth edition. Why there aren't orc miniatures in the Space Marine one?
Yeah.
We've also got new action figures. Now, the Bandai miniatures are due to ship in April. They're not miniatures. They're the fully articulated whiz-bang. They sold about 9,000 of them. They've previewed ones produced by McFarlane Toys. And they're apparently going to be doing a number of models, not just Primaris Intercessors, which is obviously Bandai only did the Space Marine. You can buy painted or unpainted, which will let you obviously paint them how you enjoy. But they've already confirmed they're not just doing Space Marines. We're going to see characters and other things. So, interesting. I've seen a lot of people complaining about the proportions on this. He does look a bit weird. But I also think it's to do...
The proportions are out for every model though, aren't they?
Well, I was about to say, I think it's also to do with how we're used to seeing them at scale and how that scale is already squished. And I mean, the Primaris are better than the standard Space Marines, but...
If you think about it, most of the Space Marines, when you look at them, their head is the same size as the torso.
Well, yeah, or the shoulder pad, or...
You know, like, I've actually never met a man whose head is the same size as his torso.
No. I mean, I think the photos they've released on their community site also don't necessarily help, because it is a very closed pose.
Yeah.
And I think, like, we've got our big Space Marine banner that's actually sat in the room here with us that you'll have seen at tournaments. And I think that this pose, if you, depending on the articulation, if you could change it to be more like that, I think would help no end. It'd change, because he's very tall at the moment. We're used to seeing Space Marines bent knees and slightly more squat.
Yeah.
So, but it's interesting because they now are expanding out into that sort of collectible market. We already had the Funko Pop Space Marines, and we've had the blind bag chibi Space Marine range. So it's interesting to see them getting a bit more mainstream. I'm still, like, we've got the TV show coming and the movie coming and all those other bits and pieces. It's going to be an interesting couple of years.
It is funny seeing it being more mainstream, isn't it?
How many people go, oh, have you seen this? Yeah, I know what that is.
Mm.
Thanks. Or I get links sent to me, oh, Mike, you might be interested in this, from my non-gaming associates and friends and whatnot and family. Mm. Yeah, yep. Know exactly what that is. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know that I'll see one of these Space Marines on our desk anytime soon.
Mm.
But if they give me an Eldar model, that's a way more likely tick box for me. We'll see. Where it'd go, I have no idea. We've already got enough stuff in this house, but I'd find somewhere.
I noticed that.
All right. Well, we're going to cut it here and take a quick break. And the rain seems to have died down, so we'll come back and talk about styles of play in just a second.
Okay, we're back. Did you miss us? Did you? Did you really?
Given the break's like 20 seconds, I'm really certain it's not a big deal for them.
Oh, that's rude.
Well, it's enough that you know, it's a light cycle when you're driving in your car, or they don't get to miss us for too long.
Good.
So, we had a...
what are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about different types of play and why there's no right or wrong way to play. And
it's difficult because we do actually police the way that people play.
Yeah.
That's part of what we do.
It's kind of the role of an organizer for any event is telling people what they can and can't do and how they're allowed to play with their toys.
That's right.
And I think that...
that's a really good point. They're toys.
It's quite a polarizing topic for a lot of people, particularly if you've got a if you only play one way, or if you're a fan of one style of play, it's very easy to end up in a them and us conversation.
It is, and it's very easy to believe that the way that you play is the only right way to play.
Yeah, exactly. Now, traditionally, we've seen that happen a lot with the narrative style of player versus the competitive style of player. And that's not just for Games Workshop games. That's pretty much for any game that you feel like attaching a narrative to, because most of them will have some sort of story background and narrative stuff where you can recreate history. I say history. You can recreate... scenes from movies or games or from the book. So, and that reaches through all of the current modern tabletop gaming games. You can play historical battles from Age of Sigmar, Warhammer 40,000, Star Wars Legion, X-Wing, the spaceship battles.
That is one thing that I do struggle with. And I know that people find joy in it and that's awesome. And, you know, and you respect that other people play that way. But I don't understand how you can recreate something and then come out with a different ending.
I can. I've played some of
those
modes of play, and it's the story says that X happens and Y is the outcome. It's about, you know, am I good enough to have changed the fate of that game with the forces that they had, type thing. So I can completely get behind that as a, you know, fixed forces. This is what actually happened, whether it's true history or fictional history.
Narrative gaming around fictional history.
Yep.
Well, no, not fictional history. Narrative gaming around fictional scenarios. Awesome. Totally, like, sparks my creativity, and I love the idea of that and getting in the whole, you know, all the story bit that goes behind it and all of that kind of stuff, all the fluff and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I struggle with it with actual history or recreating scenes from movies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what we're talking about, that different strokes for different folks and doesn't have to be your thing.
No, exactly. And that's the thing. Like, you can play Malifaux.
Please don't email me and tell me why the way you do it is right. I trust you that if you enjoy recreating
scenes... Well, she won't read
scenes,
the emails anyway. It's only coming
from
me.
Okay, feel free to email me. Don't private message me. Email me. Obsec. No.
I have to take that out at the end of the episode now. So War Machine's got it. Everything that Privateer Press has done has a long and rich story way back from Mark One. Malifaux is in its third incarnation now, and they've, you know, all the original stories, we've had characters die and move on, and their game now reflects that when you're playing in the current era of the game, but they still give you rules to play the older ones that have been removed.
Yep.
And obviously 40K and Age of Sigmar have a highly vibrant competitive scene around the world. And I'm sure that for every one competitive tournament player, there are probably 10 to 20 who aren't, who play at home with their friends and don't go to events.
And that's, I guess, similar to what I was saying in the introduction, that we know of 16 to 20 tournament players and 10-ish people who don't, you know, who are players who don't attend tournaments for War Machine, but we don't necessarily know the, you know, using those...
Yeah, if it's 1 in 10, then there's a couple
of
hundred in Perth.
There's a couple of hundred that we don't know about because they play with their friends in their garage or living room or that kind of thing. So, yeah, of course there's people out there that we don't know about.
Yeah. I do think that Games Workshop games tend to have a higher relationship in terms of external players to event players because there's a source of information and... assistance in the form of the store, whereas to get into something like War Machine or Malifaux, at least here in WA, you've only got one store that stocks it, one that I can think of anyway.
Maybe two.
I know obviously Tactics is the longest running institution in terms of gaming store here in Perth, and they stock everything. But if you want to get into War Machine, you have to go in there with someone else wanting to get into War Machine.
Well, you can't accidentally start playing War Machine, whereas you can accidentally start playing...
Yeah, and that's what I mean, is that there's no support network for non-Games Workshop games. Yeah. You have to have someone else there to play with, or you have to already know about the community.
That doesn't mean that you're a competitive player, though.
No, it doesn't.
You know, it means that you can be playing in your living room or your garage or wherever you choose to play with that one friend or those three friends who got you into it, and not know that there's a whole community out there who are playing.
Although I do still question, with regards to the internet and social media, I'm sure that if you had a group of four people, the chances are one of them's going to Google something.
Well, see, that's interesting because we thought that, and yet talking to Dan, who's comes along to our events now and, you know, is, I guess, a big part of the OBSEC community, he's been playing this for however long. He didn't know that there was a whole community here that played. There are 5 Games Workshop stores and he didn't know that there was a whole community here in Western Australia that played.
That is true.
He didn't know that there was tournaments that happened or, you know, he found out about that by accident. So given how much support there is for Games Workshop, he managed to not know about anything that was happening
here. And what does that mean for the other game systems?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I'm saying. There are potentially these pockets that live in isolation, not knowing that there are other pockets who are playing it, which is kind of why we started the whole events thing, to try and bring people together.
Yeah, open up those pockets.
And share what other game systems are available.
Well, part of that, though, also stems into the way you like to play the game. Because if you're playing with your mates and you all agree on a certain rule, or you all have these agreements of how you build armies or... You know, there's nothing right or wrong if that's what you and your group do. No one else gets to have a say in what you do.
No.
If you change the rules, if you think, you know what, in 40K I want sixes to always hit for everyone, cool. As long as you and your opponents agree and everyone's happy, then there's no problem.
No, and we've talked about this a few times around what that social contract is, but in a few episodes, I think one was probably called Simple Hammer, maybe? I don't know. I know we've had a discussion around Simple Hammer.
I've got that spreadsheet closed, so I can't tell you.
That's all right. And that was talking about the simplified version that Brett created or started playing initially with his kids, and then you've played with our kids since then. And we talked about that on the last episode as well, around how you kind of reduce the, I guess, the complexities of the game. But that's that social contract that you have with the person who you're playing with, that you can play Simple Hammer or Drunk yeah. Hammer or whatever other Hammer version you've got.
But that's the thing. I mean, it'd be very easy for someone who's been playing with their mates, and we see it quite regularly, actually, with players who are used to playing with their mates, and then they come to a tournament for the first time.
That that's actually not the rules.
Yeah. And they come to a tournament and go, hang on, but this is the way I play with my mates. And you go, well, yeah.
Yeah, but that's not the rules.
That's not what it says. Or there's an FAQ for that. Yeah. Is another really... I'm amazed to this day that people go to tournaments and don't know where to find the FAQs.
But if it's your first tournament...
No, I'm talking about regular tournament attendees.
Well, that's not that they don't know, is it?
Oh, no, I get questions. Where do I find them?
Again, that's not that they don't know.
Yeah.
There's a choice there.
There is.
If it's your first tournament...
Oh, no, you do get a grace period.
Yeah, definitely. If you haven't been before and you're not aware of those kinds of things that we take for granted because we talk about them every single damn day...
I put the links in the players pack.
Okay, well, most new players actually read the players pack.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay, depends on who's coaching them on the players pack, to be honest.
Yeah, if you've put the links in the players pack, then there is no excuse. Right, I take it back.
It's been there since day one.
And that comes back to the different learning styles.
Yeah,
and,
it does.
You know, we really do need to think about whether or not there's different ways that we can present that players pack so that people who don't necessarily learn through reading can be able to get that information as well. So
could be a good video.
Well, we've talked about doing that. We need to just actually do it.
Do it, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, God, could you imagine how long that video would take?
Oh, no, we'd just abridge parts of it. Mm. The problem is if we skip a page, then everyone else thinks they can skip a page. So so we can't do that either.
I'm going to have to read the player's page.
It does, yes.
Damn. I always read the page with the timetable that tells me what time's lunch is.
Mm. So that you can schedule the bar and schedule the food.
Yep, 100%. I'm on the important bits here, folks. What time does the beer start?
So, those home gaming groups, I would normally classify as narrative gaming groups, particularly if they don't come out and play at events. Now, they might be playing a competitive format, but ultimately there will always be homebrew agreements and rules that creep into those over a period of time. I used to have gaming groups before we had tournaments in Perth that were exactly the same, where there wasn't an answer, you came up with something weird, no one really understood how to look or where to look, so you made a decision as a group and that's what you went with.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, the strongest personality in the group makes the decision, but yeah.
Yeah. So I would say that if you are playing... I mean, a lot of the games now have a narrative format and a competitive format anyway. Mm. And Bolt Action's got the same, where you can recreate historic battles or where you can just have an open play style format. 40K goes another step and says, here's open play, which is pull out as many toys as you like and just play.
Yep.
Then there's narrative where...
story-based.
It's recreating stuff and they throw in a bunch of different styles of missions like City Fight and Jungles of... Cities of Death and... Planet Strike and all those other formats, and then matched play. Now, matched play is...
That's our bread and butter.
It's also what most games, at least on the internet, are known for these days, is the organized play format.
Mm-hmm.
Games Workshop calls it matched play, and then they've added another caveat that now calls parts of it organized play to boot.
Just add a little bit more confusion in.
And then you've got things like the Age of Sigmar battle... now the names escape me. It's completely flitted out of my head as I said it. It's their version of Chapter Approved. They do it every year. And it updates the match play rules and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hazard a guess and say that the majority of players that have been exposed to matched play have done it at a store or at an event. And it certainly feels to me like that is the dominant way people play. Even if they're playing a narrative game, they tend to use the points rather than power levels, and they tend to follow the rough format of match play in terms of how you build armies and agreed on points values and all that other sort of nitty gritty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
X-Wing, a lot of the time I see done the same way. War Machine plays at 75 point steamroller format every time I see it played. Well, occasionally there's a Mangled Metal, but 75 points is the standard there. So I do think that the majority of players would probably feel comfortable with that style of game, whether it's a pickup game at a store, whether it's with your mates, or whether it's at a tournament. I feel like that's a good baseline to establish in terms of what the expectations are for most players.
Yep.
The danger then comes in around some of the intricacies of those matched play formats, where you end up in a situation where, are we playing matched play? Are we playing organized matched play? Are we playing ITC organized match play? Are we playing
ETC
organized match play? Because they have their own different sets of rules and terrain bits and FAQs and missions. And
different standard normal, really. Yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, you can just play rulebook.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I was thinking for standard normal. Like for me, a standard event, I guess, you know, Maelstrom is just, it's just a thing. Whereas for ITC, it's not.
No, and the Maelstrom argument for ITC is another day's topic. But
yeah, no, I wasn't trying to open that can of worms. But I was just saying that, yeah, it's just a different normal depending on what. And so, oh, we're just going to play just normal match play.
What does that actually mean?
You've got to kind of dig down and go, well, what is that? Or, you know, if you're organising a game at your local gaming club and you want to play, like, you've got to actually clearly define what kind of match you're walking into.
Yeah. I mean, even things like the rule of three, which has been universally upheld by everyone on the internet.
Yep.
And it's very rare I find anyone who doesn't adhere to that, even out in the wild.
We occasionally do a rule of one.
Yeah. But I mean, for pickup games at stores and that sort of thing, that's actually an organized play rule for 40K. Mm. Like, that's not even matched play. That is them saying, if you're playing at a tournament, this is what we recommend for table size, for points values, for time limits, and for unit options. And it's interesting that even the most staunch sort of advocates for following the rules have just applied that universally. And there seems to be a big disconnect between playing that standard type of game, and then when they move to narrative, it doesn't tend to be at the same points values and stuff. Like, one of the Warhammer managers, Shane, here in Perth, has a huge collection of Tyranids and Iron Hands. Now, I've seen him play little games. I say little games, I'm talking 1,500, 2,000 point
tiny
games. <Yeah. laughs> He has tens of thousands of points of both those armies painted.
So, and painted beautifully.
Yeah. So when he goes around to another person's house who has a similar quantity of painted models, they don't care about the rule of three.
Yeah.
They just rock up, and Shane fields dozens of some of these units that shouldn't have more than three on a match play game.
Yeah, because they're just playing.
Yeah. And that's what I mean about there's no right or wrong there.
Yeah, no, I get it. And it is, like, it is a different, it's sort of a different mentality, isn't it? Like, The difference between, oh, I'm going to, for example, for yourself, I'm going to have a game with this particular player, we're getting some practice in for X event, versus I'm going to have a game with this particular player, I'm just going to mess around and see what, it's just a fun game, you know, it's just, I'm going to try this out, see how it goes, we're just putting all the models on the table and we're just shooting each other, see who's left standing, or, you know, see which Titans survives longest.
Yeah.
Or who can deploy fastest, or, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, there's that different mentality of, is there a competitive purpose to this game, or is it, it's just a fun pickup game?
Yeah. And I think that once you start drilling into that, I mean, both of those games could easily be done under the organized match play format. And I would also go so far as to say that's the likely choice. I've got two particular players in mind who sit in both those two categories. One's very much into playing cool, fun games with the models that he has and making stories that go with them. And we've played Titan games and we've brought all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff together just to see and experience and play and hang out.
Yep.
I have another friend who is at the other end of that scale who wants to compete, who, you know, he is a very competitive individual. And he plays hard and expects me to do the same. Both of them I could write lists for, and I could play the list in either of those games. I can tell exactly how those games would play out if I did swap
really
them over. And there's no right or wrong way there. So I do feel like as soon as you start choosing those formats, it has to be done in conjunction with the opponent. And when you come to a tournament, then obviously the TOs are the ones making that connection for you, and you can choose to go or not go based on whether you agree with that format. the danger is when you choose not to go to something without knowing and having experienced that format for yourself.
Yeah, and that's something that I've been reflecting on a little bit recently, because we're sort of looking at what we're doing and what changes we can make and that kind of thing. Anyway, so we had a discussion and a conversation with someone recently, and it made me think about one of the first blog posts that I wrote around the idea that all tournament attendees are hardcore players.
Yep.
And trying to dispel that myth. And I think when we first started Objective Secured, we saw a lot of people who weren't prepared to come to match play events or to formal tournaments. Well, now we try and call them events rather than tournaments, because everyone who comes to events is a hardcore gamer. And they didn't want to experience the kind of game that they knew they were going to get when they came to one of our events. The thing is, they'd never been to one of our events, so how did they know that they were going to experience that? So they were making a decision based on assumptions, based on something that they'd read on the internet or seen based from America or whatever, rather than actually looking into it for themselves and experiencing it themselves.
I think the I've been fairly clear in my thoughts around certain formats with 40K.
And it's unlike you to share your personal opinion and to, you know, just put that out there. Normally you're so reserved and, you know, you really try and give a balanced argument with both sides. Yeah, it's really difficult to pick where you stand
I'm trying to balance that now, because one of the things we said last year, particularly in regards to ITC, was, okay, we'll try ITC as organisers and see what the community wants and thinks. Mm-hmm. And I've played a bit of ITC since then, and I played it before then in preparation for LVO. Admittedly, that was a different game. That was 7th edition, not 8th.
It was also a uber competitive event.
Yeah, it was LVO.
You were going to.
Yeah. And I feel like I was just as guilty as some players of saying, I don't like what I see coming out of America in regards to the way ITC is handled.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it's bad. And while as a player and as a TO, I have the ability to look at it and go, I can understand how the missions play out. These are the reasons I don't like these missions. I've also taken a step back over the last 12 months since we ran that first one to kind of delve into it a bit more and understand what people might like about it. Mm. Because it's easy to just go, I don't like it because it's not what I play, and I don't like this and that of it. Maybe there are actually parts that are good about it.
I love the scoring system.
I see, without getting too far into it, I have problems with it and I like parts of it.
I like the part where you go through and score as you're going.
See, I like that and don't like that. Because I want the turns to matter as you go.
I don't understand what you mean.
So with ITC... Mm. If you score hold one, hold more, kill one, kill more, and the bonus in that turn, then that has no bearing on the following turn.
Okay, so...
Whereas if you've got Maelstrom cards where you have to hold it for two turns or hold it at the end of the game, and again, with variable game length and hold it at the end of the game, it makes the end game more complex and interesting, in my opinion.
Mm.
So there are parts...
I wasn't necessarily talking about the mechanics. I was just talking about the fact that I like that as you're going through it.
And that's kind of what Maelstrom does in itself anyway. I like that there is progressive scoring, but I also feel like there needs to be... In my experiences, the ITC games have kind of been decided by about the end of turn 3 or turn 4, and turns 5 and 6 generally, as I've been playing, haven't necessarily... The game's kind of decided. And I like the idea of
maybe
having...
Maybe you just need to be better.
I win more than I lose. But I feel like that's kind of been one of my hang-ups with the system, is I'm used to playing one way where the end game matters, and it's taken me a little while to wrap my head around the fact that it's actually okay just to play something that doesn't matter in and adjust my playstyle to respond to that accordingly. Now, I'm not there yet because I don't play it enough.
Yeah, well, you don't play enough.
As much as I used to, no. Yeah. So,
but I think that I'm not sure if you've noticed, but for gamers in general... The ones that I know and spend time with and experience, they don't handle change particularly well.
No.
So that whole, with what you're just saying, like it's taken me a long time to wrap my head around that this Yeah, that's going to happen with gamers. It takes a long time for any kind of shift to, you know, it's how many times have we done episodes on The Sky is Falling?
Yeah.
Every time a new FAQ comes out or a new, you know, The Sky Falls, at least once every 6 months.
Yeah.
If not more often. So it takes time. And I guess that's kind of where I was at with the talking about the not all gamers are hardcore gamers, is the idea of having an open mind.
Yeah. I do think it's very easy for TOs to set the standard and expectations because, I mean, the ETC isn't a good term anymore. I suppose the World Team Championships for 40K is what it needs to be labelled now. Because
not necessarily, because we don't know what the World
I know what the World Team Championship format's going to be, and I know what the ETC Team 40K event is now going to be, and the ETC Team 40K event is now ITC, just to make it more confusing and convoluted.
Right. Well, anyway.
Whereas the WTC is the old...
Well, can we just call it what has formerly been known as ETC?
The artist formerly known as ETC. That's sort of been the standard here in Australia, or at least in Western Australia, for a number of years because that was the format that the national events were being played at in terms of the Australian Team Championships and the Australian Masters. And then we've seen the ITC over the last couple of years integrate a little bit into the East Coast, particularly in New South Wales, a little bit in Victoria, a little bit in Queensland, a little bit in South Australia, mostly in South Australia as well, to be fair. And now the landscape's a bit more blurred. Now, what's interesting is in America, you see so much stuff about ITC, 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 but as you leave the West Coast, that seems to drop off.
And that's it. It's around who's got the loudest voice.
Well, it's also, like, if your community's only running, like, if you live in California, I don't think I've ever seen an event that isn't ITC.
But we haven't seen it. That doesn't mean it's not there.
No, exactly.
Because the people who have the loudest voice are the ones who we see. And in WA... And we have the loudest voice because there are how many people listening to us jabber on about this now?
No, that's true.
So there could potentially... Well, okay, I hope that we know everyone who's running events here in WA, but there's a possibility that there's a whole heap of ITC events that are happening that we don't know about because they just quietly get on with it.
Well, the only advantage these days is between online scoring and all the rest of it. You can normally find them
unless there's
in BCP
some
or...
other scoring platform that we don't know about as well.
Yeah.
But my point is that we don't necessarily know. So we hear about ITC coming from America because Frontline Gaming have got a really loud voice.
Yeah, and they're good at what they do.
They're really good at what they do. I wish we were as good at what they do as what they are.
I think that sentence made sense. I'm not sure.
I don't know, but maybe.
But that's kind of my point there is that it's very easy for the organizing community who run these events to set an expectation within the community and then have the community really resistant to any change.
Mm-hmm.
So using WA as the example, like I say, the former ETC format has been the norm for a number of years and the introduction of ITC has been quite polarizing for parts of the gaming community who just don't even want to give it a chance. They go, no, I don't want to play ITC because I don't like ITC, so that's that. And I feel like there's an opportunity there to improve yourself as a player, if nothing else, because A, you're getting more table time, but B, you're having to change your thought processes at the table to accommodate for the different deployment types and the different missions. So if you're interested in getting to be a better player...
You know, see, I don't like that because I actually don't... It depends on what you're hoping to achieve. If you want to go and play at
Well, that's why I said if you want to become a better player.
But not necessarily. Because that... Does playing ITC, does that actually positively impact how you play in an ETC-style event?
Yeah.
But surely that's just to do with getting more time. So I don't think that you can say, if you play more ITC, you'll become a better player.
I think playing more makes you a better player.
Yeah, playing more does. But I don't...
But I also think there's opportunities that both formats present to let you do things on the table with different types of army builds that you may not necessarily have thought about for the other format. So you might take units for ITC that you wouldn't take for former ETC and then do something on an ITC table and go, hey, you know what? I can translate to something else. So it makes you a more rounded player. So I feel like not only is the table time good, but the experience across multiple formats is good. And the flip side of that is that if you are living in California and you only know ITC, the idea of using Maelstrom cards would be, and I've seen it, on the internet plenty, and I've spoken to people who I know who live there. The idea of using Maelstrom cards is absolutely absurd and horrid because who can possibly...
I wonder, is it? Or is it just the vocal minority?
Well, I had a TO say to me, how can we possibly expect players to remember to bring cards to every game?
So they remember to bring their models and their tape and their dice?
Well, that was what my response was. I said, well, it's just part of the paraphernalia. What's the problem? Like, they're $10, like less in America. And he's gone, well, yeah, but you're requiring them to bring them. And what happens if they lose them?
You know what? We also require them to bring clothes.
Yeah.
And out of the two, if you're going to forget one, I really would prefer it if you forgot the Maelstrom cards, just
not
saying.
Not the clothes.
Yeah.
But that was my argument with him, is that's an absurd argument.
That's a stupid argument. Like, there's no argument there with, oh, well, you know, people are going to have to remember it. Yeah. Well, then again, we do have people who rock up with half their army that they've forgotten. So, you know, there are issues where sometimes, occasionally, people
But that'll happen
things.
In both formats. Format's not a factor at that point.
It's really not. It's really not. And, you know, we've all done it where you walk out and then you think you've got everything, but actually you've left one of the cases on the couch. Or
left flying stands in your hotel room or...
Or at the airport before you got on the plane.
Yeah.
You know, any of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I do actually get that you forget things. But as a sweeping generalisation, you can't say, oh, you can't expect players to remember to bring cards with them. Do you know how much stuff we expect them to bring?
Yeah.
Just one more set of cards, it's nothing.
No. And they're not expensive and...
No, out of everything, they're probably one of the cheaper things to actually have.
And you probably bought them anyway because you'll have your psychic powers and your other bits and pieces out of that deck. Your stratagems and things. Most players I know have them there as reference points.
Yeah.
So I didn't really buy that as an argument, to be perfectly honest.
I don't think that's an argument. I think it's just a different way to play, and gamers seem to be resistant to change. It does take quite a bit of coaxing and work to actually get change to occur.
Yeah, and I think that there's nothing wrong with the two of them existing side by side in terms of two different match play formats.
Mm.
And I think 40K becomes a little bit unique in that regard because, like, the organized play for X-Wing is managed by Frontline Gaming. The organized play for Malifaux is in the Weird's hands. They produce a pack for that. Steamroller comes from Privateer Press.
No, it's nothing for Bolt Action.
I don't know. They do have a format because they do supply, like, you can apply to get trophies and stuff out of Warlord.
Mm.
But I don't know if they're at that point there where they're actually organizing that sort of thing, like, as a competitive. I mean, obviously there are competitive Bolt Action and Gates of Antares being played.
Mm. I mean, they ran a actually I should remember what the name of their big, was it Masters event at the end of last year?
The one that we got tickets for show, yeah. Yeah, they did they did one in Nottingham.
So they're obviously running big competitive events in order to have that.
But I feel like that's part of the issue that we have with 40K at the moment, is that Games Workshop keep giving us these half-measured, hey, if you're going to run organized play, this is what we think you should do. But do what you want. And the community doesn't do what they want. They read that and go, oh, you're telling us to do that, so we'll do that. And because they've half implemented it, that's where a lot of this resistance from the community comes from. But
it's only coming from some parts of the community.
Oh, look, some players don't care. They'll just go and play because they want to play.
But also, you've got the whole contingent. Like, so when it comes to match play, what is recommended by Games Workshop? Which version of it is? Which version of it is it?
Well, that's it. Because they don't have the ETC missions. They don't have the ITC missions.
No, they've just got standard rulebook.
So they've got the rulebook missions or the chapter-approved missions, which are the most recent version, which they recommend for match play. And there are 12 missions in the latest book.
So what you're saying, this is where I'm trying to pull apart your argument here. What you're saying is that people read what Games Workshop suggest and then say, well, this is what we should be doing. But that's not what I'm seeing at all. I very rarely see anyone that says we should only be playing rulebook missions and we should only be doing it according to chapter approved. I see generally two main camps. One is former ETC/WTC and one is ITC, with a small percentage of brand new players who want to play rulebook missions because it's a simplified version.
Unless you're going to Warhammer World or a Warhammer store, at which point it's all rulebook missions.
Yeah. That's not what I'm talking about.
No. But that's, you know, some of the biggest events at Warhammer World, you know, 80, 90 players, and they only play Maelstrom or Eternal War. Like, they do only play the rule missions, but that's far and away not the majority.
No.
Because the majority of the organized play circuit seems to want the complex style missions, whether it's ITC or WTC. So either of those two formats, though, are homebrew.
Yeah.
Essentially, what you're talking about is a group of rules that were done by players that they used themselves and went, we think everyone should play this way.
Mm-hmm.
Here you go. That's what we're talking about. And I think that's where most of the resistance comes from, because why is your opinion more valuable than mine? Why did you get to write this and say this is the way it needs to be? Why don't I get a say in that?
If there's anyone in WA who wants to write their own, let us know. We've got an event for May and June that we can fill.
But I think that one of the sticking points for me, the reason why I always was happy with former ETC, is that they felt closest to the rulebook missions because they were a combination of three missions that were in the main rules.
Yeah.
So even though you're smashing them together and having to try and tweak them a little to make them work, for me, because I like that, you know, that structure of following as many of the rules as closely as possible.
So why don't we run just straight rulebook?
We do, on occasion.
Yeah.
But that's partly because we as organisers want to provide for the maximum amount of players across the year to give everyone the experience that they want. Mm-hmm. And so we do a bit of everything. I mean, we've run Maelstrom for First Blood. Mm-hmm. Linebreaker isn't just Maelstrom. It's Maelstrom and Kill Points. I wonder if anyone's actually spotted that in the players pack. No one's mentioned it yet.
Have we got one more complex mission in Albany, don't we?
No.
Did you not end up putting it in?
No, I didn't put that in. I just put kill points in every mission. That's two out of three for a complex mission. Mm. The Interclub will be complex missions, but then in April, but then the same month. Actually, no, that probably won't, because it's got to account for clubs and stuff that don't necessarily play complex, so that'll probably be Maelstrom. Then the ITC one in April that we host at the end of April.
Mm-hmm.
May will be complex missions as a prep in order to hit WATC in August.
Mm-hmm.
July is Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
August is WATC, which is complex missions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've got two or three others in the gap there, which I haven't got a format for yet. I haven't decided on.
Masters.
And then Masters will be complex again. So it's actually pretty spread out across the year. We'll probably have two ITC, three or maybe four complex, and then the rest of them will probably be rulebook. Mm. Because that's overwhelmingly what we've seen our community want.
Mm.
Now, there's nothing stopping other organisers running what their clubs and their groups want.
Yeah, no, and I think that the difficulty is that we run what players want, but if you haven't played it, do you know what you want?
Yeah.
So that's why we do try and put – that's why we've tried to put the ITC in there and still make it so that it's not – hyper-competitive event, in that it's a competitive event but not a hyper-competitive personality event. Does that make sense?
Not especially.
Okay. So the First Blood ITC is really quite a competitive event, isn't it?
Yep.
So First Blood Part 2 is a competitive event. But I think that you can be a competitive player without that changing your personality.
Yeah, and I think...
So you can... basically what I'm saying is you can still be a nice person across the table. You don't have to turn into a hyper-competitive person.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say this without using swear words.
No, I get your point. And that's also been part of my head scratch confusion around ITC, because there aren't any... soft scores don't bother me that much anymore.
They still bother me.
Which is why we still do them.
Yep.
But at the same time, I feel like there's a percentage of players in the community who feel like if the soft scores for sportsmanship in particular are removed, there's a worry from parts of the community that that will change the attitude of players. And ITC doesn't use a positive reinforcement model. They use a negative reinforcement model in the red card, yellow card.
Mm.
There are pros and cons to both. We've had this out many, 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 many times, and we're not going to bore you with it now.
Yep.
But I feel like that's also a concern from a lot of players. And I think that partly stems from the Australian culture.
Where and that's why I guess I'm trying to say that that's probably a good way to put it. Even though there aren't soft scores around sportsmanship, we still have an expectation that anyone that comes to any of our events behaves in a sportsman-like manner. So, and it's part of our code of conduct that, yeah, just because we're not giving you an extra score for sportsmanship doesn't mean that we expect people to behave without sportsmanship.
Yeah. But I do think that that's...
a misconception.
Yeah. And it stems from the not just the gaming culture, but the culture of the country where you originate from and what the expectations are from the... from you culturally as in regards to sports and all that sort of stuff. And if you look at, you know, when you start talking about those really, and we've had this out, fairly competitive stuff where it's a lot of it's penalties as opposed to positives, the Australian football and cricket still award fairest and bests for the grand finals. Like, you know, you get the Brownlow medal for the AFL. So we still reward people who perform well on the field, but also do it in a sportsmanlike manner. Whereas I don't know that that's done in every sport around the world. And is that just an Australian thing where we want to, you know, hey, not only are you really good at this, but you've done it so that you're not behaving like a gigantic turd?
Well, yeah. And, you know, for particularly for Aussie rules, it's also about the kind of person that you are off the field and being a good role model and that kind of thing as well.
But that's what I'm saying. Is it tied to Australian culture that that's an expectation, or is that...
I don't know, because I know very little about sport in Australia, let alone anywhere else around the world. So I...
If you're listening to this somewhere around the world, outside of Australia, let us know if you're... Like, I'm thinking about things like ice hockey in Northern America. there's a lot of punch-ups and...
That's it. Do you get...
Is there
the least amount of teeth you knocked out this season?
Or the, you know, the NFL or any of those other sort of... Like North American, are there fairest and best awards at the end of the season?
I imagine there would be in cricket, don't you think?
Well, cricket like is because cricket's English, like
English, yeah.
Yeah, I know that we give it here as part of. I don't know whether they'd still do in England, or say in Sri Lanka or India or Pakistan or any of the other sporting the cricket nations. But I'd be interested to know.
How did we get here?
Well, it's to do with sportsmanship and ITC, which is how we got here.
Goodness.
And national identity of culture around competitive. It's a really deep topic. It is. It's taken us 40 minutes to get there, but it is a really deep topic. So.
Not sure how we set out to have a conversation around narrative.
Oh, no, they're listening to us, sweetheart. They know that this was never going to be on the rails for very long.
But not sure why I bother making notes for things we're going to talk about. We never cover them.
No. But at least they can follow along with the thought process because we start.
Doubt it. Well, I can't. I don't know how we ended up talking about cricket.
Anyway.
Have we got anything relevant to talk about, or are we done?
Well, I feel like it is relevant, though. And that's my point, is the reservation that some players have, not only because it is different and that's the way we've always done it, so why should we change it, but is there a secondary reservation, particularly for places that are used to including scoring that isn't part of the other format? In this case, we're talking specifically about sportsmanship and to a lesser extent, hobby scoring, soft scoring. I feel like that is a hurdle, psychologically speaking, for our players here in WA who are used to having those tied to it and the removal of those feels like you're taking away part of why they came to events and what they expected from events.
Well, for me, I guess that I think that when you take those things away, it means that if you're not making those an integral part of the event, then it does shift the focus of the event to become...
It's all about the game.
It's all that's it. The only thing that it's about is winning or losing.
Well, that's actually a much better way of putting it. It's about winning and losing. It's not necessarily about playing the game. It's actually about winning.
It is about winning. It becomes there's no other hobby aspects in there. It is only about that one aspect of how well you can play the game and whether or not you're going to walk away with a trophy. And is that how we end up with a situation where people are leaving after game one because they can't win the event?
Which is what we saw happen, particularly with LVO at the start of the year, where they had a massive drop over the 2 days play.
Yeah. So for me, that was my reservation, 100%. Now, we've only run one ITC event,
And you know what? The TSC event that was just run that I went to, they included hobby and sportsmanship.
Yeah.
I won best sport, which I was super happy with. But neither of those are ITC specific. And I think that they were, I think that, you know, Travis and Courtney and all of the TSC team were very clever in adding those, because that's part of the core reservation that a lot of players in WA have around ITC.
But that is, well, that's one of the things that Chris, who we've had on the show
from
before,
CanCon 40K.
From CanCon, he's talked about that just because it's not part of the how you score who wins the event doesn't mean you can't include those.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just that there's no kind of general...
Yeah, there's no overall
award. There's no overall award. It's just whoever wins the most games wins the event. But there's nothing stopping you including sports and including painting, because it's our event. If we want to do that, then we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can make them separate categories, or you can do an overall award or whatever you want to call it. But I do feel like, yeah, that whole mentality of resistant to change and not willing to try new things based on others' opinions is something that we as gamers easily fall into that trap
of. That's people in general.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how heavily you're swayed by the voices that are talking to you.
There are some really, really loud voices.
Yeah.
It's funny because in all of the, I've probably talked about this before, but in all of the change management training and stuff that I've done, they talk about that when you are implementing change, you don't do it in incremental stages. Like you do one fell swoop, swift change, and, you know, as dramatic as it's going to be, you just do it. The thought of doing that with gamers makes me absolutely laugh. There is no way.
There was a moment there where it looked like the ITC was going to go to Maelstrom cards for secondaries at one point there, when at the end of the LVO when we were talking about it. And I was sat there going, oh, that would just be like, first of all, that would give me my perfect format as far as I would be concerned. I would love to play ITC primary with Maelstrom secondary. I think that ticks enough boxes for me that...
Well, maybe we stick that in for one of the events.
Yeah,
and
that's exactly right. That's one that I will put out there to have a play with. But that ticks all of the boxes for me in terms of how I think would make a really good competitive game of 40K. It's got enough variables in there. You've got to figure out how you're going to do objectives and that sort of stuff. I've got to think about that. But in terms of the way it's scored, I think that actually ticks a lot of the boxes. And I thought, hey, we actually might see this happen for ITC, at which point I'm there, like... sign me up. I'd be happy to try and run that and play that, because that really interests me as a player. But then I thought about it more and went, if I just flicked a switch and said that's what we're going to do in WA now, I don't know how that'd go down.
Well, that's what I mean. We have to do it slowly and incrementally because change is... And also, this is a really complex game system.
Yeah.
So to just add a massive change on top when people have been used to doing things for however long...
General's Handbook. That's the Age of Sigmar book. It's just come back to me. You know what? I'd love Games Workshop to do that. Not the game. Not the General's Handbook.
What are you talking about?
So you're talking about ripping the Band-Aid off and doing it in one big go. The only person who can do that now is Games Workshop. The entity that is Games Workshop. If they came out tomorrow and said, hey, we're going to be releasing our organized playbook 2020.
We have talked about this however many times. The chances of it happening... is very...
I don't know.
Well, we have no control over
No,
it.
We don't.
Okay, but so...
like, that would solve a lot of problems.
There's nobody who's high in Games Workshop who's listening to this who's going to go, oh, that's a brilliant idea. I'll get on that, Mike. So, I think what we...
They don't respond to my emails either. It's very frustrating.
Have you tried sending less than one a day? I think that we need to look at what we have... control over, and we have no control over Games Workshop releasing a General's Handbook for 40K.
No, but
it would be ideal.
Yes, and I feel like if you are given the opportunity to play another format, whether it's one that you necessarily agree with on principle, if you haven't played it, do yourself a favor and actually play it just once. Because if you go to an event with a balanced expectation, I think the danger of going to an event where you think, I already don't like this, I don't want to play it. If you're in that sort of mindset, then probably don't go.
But if you're willing to actually,
whereas if you're willing to go, you know what, I don't like this because X, Y, and Z, but you know what, I haven't actually experienced X, Y, and Z, so let's go and give this a go with open arms and see after playing three or four games of a system.
Okay, I don't think you need to do open arms. I think you can do it with an open mind.
Okay.
That's
you
very
know,
different.
You know what I'm... You've just broken my train of thought as well. Good. Thank you very much.
And I also think that... You're sounding a bit preachy. Like, everyone should go and try this because it's going to make you a better player.
No, I'm not trying to be preachy.
I know, but that's how you're sounding. So I just want to say that perhaps a different way to look at it might be if you want more opportunities to get games and these are the games or events that are available, don't write them off before you've actually tried them. Maybe give it a try. Go in with an open mind and realize that it's the same people that are across the table as were across the table when you were playing a former ETC style event or a rulebook style event. And they're not going to have magically changed just because
that's true.
The game system that they're playing is different. So trust the community enough to actually perhaps try something
and
different.
Just, yeah, it's just a new mission.
Yeah, and also be aware that every time there is a change or something gets dropped or something gets adjusted or whatnot, the world is coming to an end. You know, the sky is falling. That's just normal.
Mm.
So we don't have to take that personally either. Just...
No, jump on that train.
What do you mean jump on that train?
Just ride it out.
Yeah, that's it.
Because it's going to happen. It's going to happen periodically.
100% it's going to happen.
I'm waiting for the new Forge World books. All the Forge World indexes are now out of production. And there's no new books in sight. So we're in this lovely position where I go, do I have to ban Forge World until the new books are out? I don't know.
No.
Well, as long as they're still available for digital purchase, I won't be.
I just want to put that out there. No, we're not banning Forge World. So everyone who's just freaked out, take a breath. It's just a thought went through his head and it should have stayed in there and it came out of his mouth. Okay? So we're all good. Forge World's still fine. Jesus, how many emails are we getting about that?
I'm just going to take your disclaimer out and we'll move on.
No, don't you dare. I'm going to putting that disclaimer in every group I'm in.
So, yeah, open your mind to try out new things. There's no right or wrong way to play. And maybe Forge World will be a thing. We'll find out.
Our lovely son said to me yesterday, he says, you know, Mum, that's the kind of thing we're supposed to think and not say out loud. So I'm going to share that with you.
Okay.
You know, darling, that's the kind of thing that we can think and we can talk about together, but not while we're recording.
Okay. So anyway,
Forge World is fine. Jesus.
Enjoy the game you play.
Forge World included.
And...
I'm trying to get Forge World included in as many places so we can't cut it out.
You're going to have to literally talk over me at one point then because that's the only way
Forge World's fine.
Oh, dear.
We're not banning Forge World.
See, this is the thing. While we're laughing, I can just cut this. It's completely fine. No one's going to know but you and me. The point of this episode, though, was... That there is no right or wrong way to play. And as long as you're enjoying yourself and everyone else that you are involved with in the game is enjoying themselves, that's all that really matters. And, you know, at least be upfront about it and try it once or twice. And if you don't want to and you don't want to play it, that's cool.
Yeah.
But
that's it. There are people out there who only play narrative. Completely fine.
Yeah.
People out there who, you know, don't play anywhere other than in a store on a 4x4 table or, you know, people who don't even make it into a store and don't play anywhere other than on their house or, you know, whatever. How you want, you do you, basically. Don't judge anybody else for doing them.
Yeah. And on that, I think that's about as a succinct point as we're actually going to get out of this topic because
it's us.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and we'll wrap up in just a second. Well, that's nothing new for us in terms of a topic that went round in circles, had a car crash, caught on fire.
ended up who knows where.
In a ditch somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. I do think that 52 episodes ago, when I started co-hosting this with you, perhaps it would have been, you know, a better idea if you'd found someone who was more succinct.
Yeah. Well, look, if nothing else, it should make a few people laugh, particularly that last section with no forge on in it.
Oh, my God. I'm being a grown-up, okay?
No, you're not.
I am now.
You are now.
For this moment.
For this one moment,
I'm going to be a grown-up.
Okay.
And I'm not biting.
Okay. Sure. Let's go with that.
It's killing me. okay, we got anything?
If you haven't already, check out Linebreaker. It's happening on officially the tournament is the 14th of March.
So that's 3 weeks away?
Yeah, about that. Mm-hmm. So we go down on the Friday the 13th, play on the Saturday the 14th and come home on Sunday the 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets are on the OBSEC website, including the players pack and the food tickets as well. So it's $80, including your 2-night stay at the dorms at the venue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 2-night stay and the tournament ticket is the $80. And then if you want meals for the period of time that we're there, it's another $70, which includes 2 breakfasts and a lunch and a dinner.
Ideally, if you could please purchase that meal ticket as soon as possible so I know how much food to actually provide.
Catering is a thing.
And let me know if you have any dietary requirements.
Yes.
So if we have vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free, starch-free.
Yeah, any of that stuff.
Anything else free. Otherwise, for those other people who are listening, I promise there will be meat.
You always do a lot of salad and it does get eaten. But
it does actually, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's potato salad, rice salad, pasta salad, green salad.
Yeah, the green salad doesn't get eaten. I'm the only person who eats that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But everybody else eats the other stuff. The unhealthy salads get eaten. I get a big plate of green
salad. The carb salads get eaten.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got that in March, and then hopefully we'll have all the tickets and everything for the Interclub available on Tuesday or Wednesday. By the time you hear this, they should be available.
Good.
So, if you're not part of a club or a team, go and hit up the representative at your local club or team and see if they're part of the Interclub here in WA. And if they
don't know about it, get them to get in touch with us.
Yeah.
Because it really is open to as many different clubs. Because, as I said before, we really are trying to do what we can to bring people together and to try and create hostility between clubs.
Particularly by banning Forge World.
Oh my God, you suck! And just in case you didn't get it, the idea is not to create hostility between clubs. It is to create senses of community overall, but also within your local club and gaming store.
Yeah, and some friendly rivalries and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so it is supposed to be fun. And
anyway, I think that's everything for today. I'm disappointed I didn't see any Lumineth Realm Lords previews yet. I thought we were getting one every 2 weeks and I didn't see one this weekend.
Did you look?
I did. Huh. For Age of Sigmar. So I'm a bit, oh, where's my new pictures? Where's my new stuff? But I'll have to wait.
I was okay with it. Okay, what have we got coming up? We have got Linebreaker coming up down in Albany.
Which I've then just
we
covered.
Get back from Linebreaker and that Monday Varsity. We've got Varsity.
In March, yes.
So that is one of the questions we get every single month is it only for 40K players?
Nope.
No, it's not. It's open to anybody who wants to come and play. Ideally, try and organise yourself a game beforehand. Jump on the OBSEC Gamers page and
post
a shout out if you can't organise one. You know, if you don't know who to organise one with, jump on there, see if you can get a game. You are in the process of uploading a whole heap of things to YouTube.
Yes. So all of the past podcasts have been going up 2 a day for the last couple of weeks.
We have a review of some terrain that's going up on YouTube as well. If you haven't liked and subscribed to YouTube, please do so, because we are in a race with my work to try and get to 1,000 subscribers as soon, whoever gets that sooner, which does mean that I win either way. But depending on who wins, depends on which camp I'm going to join. like and subscribe on YouTube is awesome. So that's objective secured on YouTube. What else have we got? We already talked about the Interclub. We talked about WATC.
And then we've got, so WATC tickets will go up, but basically going to be a whole bunch of tickets go up this week for the rest of the year. The players' packs may not necessarily be available because we're waiting for formats and releases and that sort of thing, but there will be basic players' packs available so that you got a rough idea of what the format's going to look like.
WATC has sold out for the last however many years.
Yeah, don't.
But we have increased the number of teams this year
Well, I've still got to confirm with the venue that those other two spaces aren't booked for that weekend.
So we're starting off opening up
20 teams of six, yes.
So make sure if you... So obviously we know that there are a few teams who are chomping at the bit waiting to get tickets for that. And 20 teams went really quickly last year. So
yeah, we had a couple sell out and miss out, and then we've had to try and accommodate because we had players who'd paid for airfares, but their captains hadn't bought tickets.
Got to buy the ticket. We know with gamers that notoriously they wait until the very last minute to buy tickets. Don't do that.
No, WATC has some very hard...
Well, just don't do that.
No,
at
not
all.
In general, yeah. But WATC has some fairly strict limits and constraints around logistics. So
you do need to make sure. And, you know, for us, we need as much lead time as possible for the amount of terrain that we need and the tables that we need and the boards that we need and that kind of stuff. So we do close that off. It's not like 2 days before the event you can come and buy
tickets.
No,
you can't. It's normally sort of a week or two out max.
Yep. So when are those tickets going up?
This week. Okay. By the time you're hearing this, if they're not up, they will be by the end of the week.
Okay. So
end of February.
Talk to your people who you game with. And again, if you don't know, like if you want to put a team together, jump in the Obset Gamers group, see if you can get a team of six together.
Keep an eye out for the 24th of May as well for a tournament. To be advised what that is, but... I'm still waiting to confirm what that is.
Perfect. We'll talk about Mayhem, won't we?
Yeah, but there's another part that I want to run alongside that. Mayhem is being revived.
Yeah. So if you were part of the Armadale Gamers group, then you would know what Mayhem is, possibly. But yeah, for WATC, the one thing to remember is that you can only play factions once per team.
Yes.
So you can't get six Eldar players together. That's not going to work.
No.
So that's just...
Everyone needs to play a different army.
Yeah, that's something to think about. All right, that's all I've got. Oh, and if you aren't already a patron, please consider becoming one. There's a whole heap of content there too.
Yes, there is.
Including the tabletop tournament prep guide that we talk about for 10 hours.
Yeah, that's a long, long, long audio file.
There's potentially some nuggets of good information in there.
There's at least 10 hours or more of us talking, so... I'm sure that, you know, if you can get 1 hour, I suppose it's...
Dig deep.
Yeah.
Let us know if you do find anything useful in it.
All right, we're done. I've got nothing else.
Oh, that's nothing
I'm
else
out.
Either.
Okay.
All right. Happy gaming, everyone.
You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.